A local school system gets a new president. The partial government shutdown gets a new twist and a new solution. And the state of Minnesota gets a new punch to the gut with federal funding that the Trump administration says still might go out the back door. Good morning, my friend. Great to be with you here on the Steve Holcomb Show. I am a little sleepy this morning. I'm not going to lie about that. And it has nothing to do with work or family commitments. No, it was a glorious night of sports. For anyone who considers themselves a Minnesota sports fan, I grew up in the northern suburbs of the Twin Cities. Man, a little bit of a stretch. A little north of that, but you get my point. Grew up, Gophers, Twins, Wild, well, at that time, the North Stars, Vikings, Timberwolves when we finally got an NBA team. And it has been nothing but a parade of frustration and disappointment most of my adult life. But last night was a top 10 day, top 10 night, top 5 night maybe in the history of my Minnesota sports fandom with the Minnesota Wild and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Winning games to advance to the second round of the playoffs, and both of them were underdogs for different reasons. I'm a huge hockey fan. You grew up in Minnesota, it's just in your blood. I was a basketball kid, didn't play hockey, but even when I was playing basketball, high school, was going home and watching those North Stars playoff games against the Chicago Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues, and huge Minnesota hockey fan. And last night was so fun. I was driving back from Grand Rapids, so I didn't really get to watch much of it. But I asked Tracy to tape the game, and I watched the last probably 10 minutes or so, the replay of it when I got home. And how great was that? The Wild just have never been able to figure out a way to win playoff games. And boy, they did last night against a team that's really, really good. They win the series 4-2. Timberwolves did the same on both accounts, Wolves and Wild, both in their home buildings last night. So you could find a party in the Twin Cities last night, no doubt about that. Anyway, we got a lot of stuff to talk about that is from the A section rather than the toy department here today. So we've got a lot of ground to get to. We're going to talk to Mark Bjornstad today. They are, I don't know what you'd say, the clubhouse leader, the odds-on favorite, the betting favorite. I'm not sure how you would describe them. Maybe we'll just ask Mark to tell us how he looks at themselves. They kind of, quote-unquote, won the competition to be the site for the new Fargo Convention Center. And then the city commission said, yeah, I don't think so. We're going to have another one to look at just because we want to. And I'm not really sure why they necessarily selected that second one. Rather than the top three or the top four, but that's what they decided to do. But I think that Brewhalla is going to have the first chance at this thing. I think that's what's going to happen in reality. So we're going to talk to Mark today about what it feels like to be in the driver's seat. Does he feel like it's a driver's seat? What kind of seat would he call this? So we will talk about that with him today coming up at 9:30. 10:30 today, Bridget Rita will be here, our ag director. And we're going to be talking about ag's place in the U.S. economy. We talk a lot about the U.S. economy, but what about agriculture? And what about this farm bill that got passed yesterday there? So a lot of interesting stuff to talk about here today on the show. Best thing I heard all day, Tim Walz has been whining about being targeted for political revenge. Isn't that sweet? Oh, Timmy. And then story of the day is this gerrymandering thing. Which the first time I heard the name gerrymandering, I thought was like some guy who was authoring some legislation. And maybe it is actually named after some guy, I don't know. But this whole thing about trying to rework your legislative district so it helps your party is way more historic than I ever realized. This stuff's been going on for forever. And some of these districts, the way they're doing them, are just almost comical. Like you can't make it up. So that's story of the day, so we're going to talk about that. It's the hottest political story in the country right now besides the war in Iran, which, again, there's not much to talk about with the war today, which is a really weird thing. Until probably this week, like every day there was something new going on. And now I and probably you are just kind of sitting here shaking our heads and kind of shrugging our shoulders saying, I don't know what's going to bring this to an end. So we'll hit that here today on the show a little bit as well. So lots of ground to cover. 701-271-1100 is our phone number and our text line. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded, can get you in fast. Now offering counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in soon at valleychristian.co. And you can also email us, studio@flagfamily.com. All right, let's get to it here. The Morning Wire, semi-automatic storylines, a rapid-fire rundown of what's going on in the world here as we begin the show on this May 1st, 2026. We made it through April already, and now it's May. Temps are going to be a little bit below average here for a little bit. More on that in just a moment. Let's take a look at the almanac for today. Average high for May 1, 62 degrees. We'll be under that today, like we've been under it all week. The average low, 38. Record high on this day in Fargo. I like to do this once in a while. If you're new to listening to this show, maybe you're a new listener since we moved to the new time slot. Maybe you just moved to town, or maybe you just caught us from who knows where, and you thought this flag station sounded worth a check, and now you listen. Appreciate you in whatever way you have come to the show. But if you're new to the program, you probably will. It will not take you long to realize that I believe that climate change, the enterprise, is a hoax. Climate is always changing. We know that. So that's not a hoax. But the business of raising money off of it certainly is. I bring you these little nuggets just to remind us all that when it seems like we've had warm temperatures before and we've had global boiling, this has been a long time ago in a lot of cases since this happened. 97, our record high back in 1959. I don't know if they were worried about the global boiling back in 1959, but if we had 97 degrees in Fargo today, I'm pretty sure that you would have the climate jihad wailing in the streets today, talking about how we're all going to die from the weather as we sit here for the however manyth day in a row when we've been below average temps. 14, the record low, that was back in 1890. Sunrise this morning in Fargo, 6:11. Sunset will be at 8:37. By the time we get to the end of the month, I always like to do that, the first day of the month, the sun will be rising at 5:37. And the sunset will be at 9:13. We're gonna change things quite a bit here before we get to the end of May. What's happening in the markets today? Ooh, good things if you got money in anything in the markets today. The Dow is up 291. S&P 500 up 60. NASDAQ up almost 300. WTI crude oil down about $5 a barrel, which is great. Because last night when I went to bed, it was like 112 and going up. But overnight, Iran sent a response to the draft peace agreement. That'll be a part of our stories of the day here coming up momentarily. So that's the story that's going on there. So thank goodness, because it's now a $4 gallon of gas pretty much everywhere in Minnesota. And it's going to be that in North Dakota here fairly soon as well. Gold today up $17 an ounce, silver up $287 an ounce, and Bitcoin today up about $3,000. We're at about $79,000. And all the people that I'm following about Bitcoin stuff say if we crack 80, we're going to be at 90 within a very short amount of time. So 80 seems to be the resistance that we're hitting our head on the charts on that. We'll see what happens. All right, what's going on in the news today? Well, my friend, I'm glad you asked, because we have a whole lot to talk about. And Addison starts playing that music just as I'm about to get going with the... All right, so I'm going to... what did I do that took so long in the first segment? I always wonder, what did I do? I'm supposed to have time for like four or five news stories here. And Addison's playing that song, so I don't know. I was just slow, I guess.
You talked sports, and that's what always gets
you. See, that's the thing. Doggone it anyway. What can I tell you? You can't take the farm out of the kid, you farm sports. I don't know how it works. Anyway, you can't take the sports out of me. I'll hit that a little bit later here in this hour of the program as well. But when we come back, give you the rundown of all the big news stories and the story of the day, the gerrymandering debate dilemma discussion. That and more coming up next. Give me a call, shoot me a text, 701-271-1100. Back after this. Rush on a Friday. Doesn't get much better than that. With a beautiful blue sky, lots of sun, not much wind today. These are the days that we live for, man. We don't get a ton of them this time of year. All right, let's get to it here as we finish the Morning Wire with stories that you need to know about. Axios reports that Iran sent a response to the U.S. offer to end the war. The response was sent through Pakistani mediators. This comes on the same day that President Trump, the Iranian people are no dummies, apparently. Trump administration faces a 60-day deadline under the War Powers Resolution related to military action in the Iran war today. Congress has not authorized continuing use of military action, and the president must withdraw troops within 60 days of notifying Congress of their deployment, and he did that 60 days ago. The president says the ceasefire means he gets a little bit more time on this thing. Democrats, of course, hate Donald Trump's guts and everything he ever stood for or ever will. And so they are in, there's no chance that they decide to give him any sort of favor on this one or any lifeline because they hate Donald Trump, if I didn't mention that before. So there's just a lot of stuff we don't know. But because Iran responded to this, oil prices have not crashed, but they've definitely taken a drop downward. We are now sitting at $99.67 a barrel on WTI. Last night, but when I went to bed after the post-game show of the Timberwolves game, it was $112 a barrel. And I'm like, oh, my word, it's going to be $5 gas here, even in North Dakota pretty soon. We're all going to be California here pretty soon, but we're going the right direction. And boy, it doesn't take much, does it? And how many millions and billions of dollars of gas money is in flux with these things? It's just insane. I'm kind of surprised Trump doesn't come out and like say stuff that just, you know, you can't prove it, but you can't disprove it either and just see what happens. So maybe he's saving those things for when he feels like he really needs them. But anyway, that's the big war update today. We will see. Oak Grove Lutheran School in Fargo has named its new school president, reports the Forum. School announced yesterday that Brian Beckstrom has been hired and will begin in June. Bob Otterson, the former president, all-around good dude and a friend of the program, has become the school's chief advancement officer. That actually happened a few months ago. Cher Thompson, a wonderful woman who I got a chance to meet not too long ago, has been the interim president since then. Beckstrom earned his master's and doctorate degrees. He is an ordained Evangelical Lutheran Church in America pastor, more than 25 years of experience in nonprofit leadership and Lutheran higher education. We say congratulations and welcome to Reverend Beckstrom. City of Fargo's announces rules for cleanup week next week. Separate items must be put into distinct piles, furniture, appliances, brush, etc., on the boulevard by 7 a.m. on your regular garbage day, but you can't put it out more than a day early. Limited to appliances per household. Doors must be removed from fridges and freezers. And, yes, you can put tires up there, up to four of them with rims allowed per household. TVs, computers, paints, chemicals, not allowed. Do not do that at the curb. They have to be taken to the hazardous waste facility. And branches and yard waste are allowed if they're separated from everything else. Branches up to 10 inches in diameter. Except if you got anything bigger than that, give me a call. I'll come and get it because I need firewood for the upcoming winter. As long as you split it and cut it and dry it for 2 years for me, if you wouldn't mind. No concrete, dirt, or construction debris. President Donald Trump has signed legislation funding much of the Department of Homeland Security, but not its immigration enforcement operations. And this ends the longest agency shutdown in history. The White House had warned that temporary funding Trump had tapped to pay Transportation Security Administration and other agency personnel would soon run out. That sparked new threats of disruptions for travelers at the airport. DHS has been without routine funds since February 14th. U.S. House, meanwhile, passed the Farm Bill yesterday, 224 to 200, setting ag policy through 2031. The bill authorizes funding for USDA programs, including crop insurance, conservation, and research. Politico reports it faces a tough path, though, in the Senate. 14 Democrats voting in favor of it, 3 Republicans against. The lawmakers stripped a controversial provision that would have protected pesticide manufacturers like Bayer, you know, the whole Roundup thing, from state-level lawsuits. The bill includes amendments allowing SNAP recipients to purchase rotisserie chickens and make various adjustments to conservation programs. The current farm bill expires September 30th. In his latest action targeting Minnesota fraud, Dr. Mehmet Oz, administrator for Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, said his agency would delay paying $91 million in Medicaid claims to the state. He said this is about protecting patients and respecting taxpayers. The money being withheld includes $76 million tied to 14 service categories tied to vulnerable fraud. The remaining deferred payments, $14 million, could potentially have been directed towards illegal immigrants who weren't supposed to be getting this coverage. The most recent amounts are on top of an initial $259 million that the agency halted in February amid the North Star State's ongoing fraud scandals. And Third Drop Coffee in Moorhead has closed. The Forum reports that owner Sean Gibbery confirmed the news, saying the store closed earlier this week. The rent was too high and the sales were too slow, Gibbery told the Forum, and said they told me to get everything out by the 30th. I always shed a little tear when a good local business says, you know what, we just can't do it anymore. The rent was too high and sales were too slow. Like everybody who does business in retail, I think, these days is singing something of that song. And so, Sean, well done, my man. I'm not sure how long that they were in business over there, but doggone it. When you think about, so this is a story for me, right? Because I am a business owner in addition to doing the show here. And when I think about everything that we go through here as owners in this company to just try to keep it going, you try to take care of your employees, you try to stretch and grow, and you try to have a great product, and you try to market it the best you can, and all of those things. And sometimes your best efforts just aren't enough. And you'd like to think, well, I can just will my way to making it happen. But there's many businesses that just for whatever reason are not able to do that. And we see another one here. So a Third Drop Coffee. Sean, thank you, buddy, for sticking yourself out there and trying to get the local economy going a little bit further and a little bit faster with what you did. I know Third Drop has and had a really good reputation. And I'm hoping that maybe Sean and whoever else worked with him in his leadership are going to be able to find an opportunity. Maybe come over to the Fargo side. It's a little easier doing business over here. And maybe it's a little easier to make a way to bring back Third Drop. Maybe we call it Fourth Drop Coffee or something and start up all over again here and find a way to keep that thing going and keep that great tradition alive. You don't get that far like Sean did without having done a lot of things right. So job well done. Thanks for giving it a go, and all the best to you in the days ahead. All right, 28 past the hour. When we come back, the clubhouse leader, that's what I'm calling him, Brujala, for the Fargo Convention Center. They are going to get, I think, the longest look for the proposed site. And we're going to talk to a gentleman who has a lot to do with that coming up next. Don't go away. You've done it, and you know you have. Smiled with your mouth closed. You skipped the family photos, or you hid in the back, hoping nobody would see you. You wanted to laugh, but it kind of something was just holding you back. The reason is because you're not proud of that smile. Maybe you've even passed on dinner invites and avoided family time. Well, that doesn't have to be you anymore. A new smile can change your confidence, your comfort, your everyday life. It's not just about teeth. It's about genuinely enjoying time with people you love without holding back. That's what my friend Dr. Matt Eaton at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center does. He makes smiles great again, I guess you could say. feeling comfortable smiling again, it does matter. And Dakota Implant and Sedation Center in Fargo, they make it easy. And a lot of times you can get the whole thing done in the same day. How great is that? Take the first step today. Go online and find out about them. Find out what they can do for you. Schedule an appointment. Doesn't cost you anything to get some answers. DakotaImplant.com is the website, DakotaImplant.com. We are pleased to be joined in studio here this morning on the Steve Hallstrom Show by Mark Bjornstad. He's co-founder and president of Brewhalla. And Mark, we appreciate you coming by. Good to see you.
Great to see you today, Steve. It's a beautiful Friday out there, so I'm glad to be with you.
There you go. Yeah, hard to come inside on a day like today, right? We finally have a day when it's not 50-mile-an-hour winds and there's some sun out there. But always a good day to talk about things like that. I have to get this out of the way before I go any further, that I do not have a rooting interest. I'm trying to stay very impartial on this whole thing. But I have to tell you that Brewhalla has a special place in my heart. I love your place.
Thank you.
It has become it's a spot where me and a couple of my buddies go to solve the world's problems and talk sports. And I just love the vibe there. And I was telling you this before the segment started, that when I went down to Frisco following the Bison, one of their national championship games, I went to one. There was one big, like a food mall. They had a stage in the middle. And I went in there. I go, oh, my word, if Fargo could ever have something like this. And then you guys started building one not too long after that. Overall, has Brewhalla been as good of an experience to own and to operate as it is to go there and enjoy the time?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, what it comes back to at Drecker and Brewhalla is we've got an amazing team. I love showing up to work every day. I love working with everybody there, and they're so creative. Everyone tries to inject fun and create an experience there. And so, yeah, it's been an absolute blast. Making that space for the community and getting to work there every day, it's truly a dream.
Yeah, well, good for you guys. So we had you on not too long ago talking when you were kind of one of the four that were selected to really take a look at. So we got to hear a little bit of that, but I think some of those big questions that we still have or misconceptions are really helpful here. So first of all, congratulations. You scored the top of the four options by the committee. So here we thought it was kind of like start negotiating with you guys to see if it can happen, and all of a sudden they say, no, we're going to take a look at one more. So do you feel like you won or not really at this point?
No, I mean, we're very excited and honored to be moving on in the process, and what the city's doing now is going through the due diligence, taking a deeper dive into the top two proposals, making sure they're financially viable, and looking at those really important details to ensure that this is going to be a great and successful enterprise for the city.
Okay, so let me play, just for the sake of a good conversation, let me play devil's advocate. Let me throw some things your way that I've heard people say, and you tell me like what your response would be. And sure. I you've kind of done this in bits and pieces, but these things, they kind of all run together in our minds when we're not in it every day like you guys are. So thanks for putting up with me on this. First question I hear is, oh my gosh, the homeless shelter is going to be right next door. Why would we want to put a convention center next to the homeless shelter?
Yeah, that won't be there. That's a temporary location. That building is actually owned inside of our development group, and that was set up as a temporary location with the city. They wanted a spot for 2 years. By the time the convention center is built, that will be gone and onto its next life. Not going to impact the convention center at all.
Okay, so what if that doesn't happen? Like, what if they say it's going to be for 2 years, then they're going to move it, but what if they can't get that done? And, well, let's just keep it there for a little while longer. Then what do we do?
That's not how the lease works on that. It's finite.
Okay, so that's not us. So this is not, let's not ever talk about this anymore, basically, because it's a...
I mean, we were happy to work with the city and help find a solution to that, because that needed to move and that needed to transition to a new life for itself. And I think they want to move it on to some state operations or moving it with the nonprofits to operate it. This is really just a stepping stone, and it's a completely temporary location.
Is that your lease? Do you guys hold the lease on that property?
That's with Cityscapes Development.
Well, then no matter what anybody wants, you say, we're not renewing that lease. Sorry. Yep. So you control all those cards.
Correct.
Okay, fair enough. When John Strand comes in the other day on this show, and I understand you listen to the program, so you might have heard this. John says, you know what I love about downtown? I can walk out the front door. I say, do I want to go left? Do I want to go right? Do I want to go straight ahead? Because there's so much to do downtown. And I love your area that you're at. I love what you've done there. But there's not a left and a right and a center necessarily to go to there. So what do you say to that? Like, there's nothing else to do over there.
Well, on day one, you know, Brujala is an amazing amenity to connect to a convention center. Brujala already sees about 550,000 guests a year through that. It's one of the number one locations.
Is that right?
In town.
500,000 people. I didn't know that.
So you've got 14 local great businesses in there. That's a huge amenity for attendees to go to. And then the day that the convention center is open, that area is going to change completely. And I think one thing that's important to look at with the convention center, it's the mix of types of events that come there. It's going to be heavily regional, and it's going to be a driving sort of attendance. So you need to have parking lots. You need to have access. That's not possible downtown. There's not enough land for that. So if you're thinking about where you want a convention center to be successful in 5 and 10 and 15 years, you really need to be looking at the perimeter of downtown. And so the Brujala location is perfectly set up to be right on the edge of downtown. That's where downtown is growing. Those guests will spill out into downtown, and then the surrounding area that we're going to redevelop that will happen with the convention center out there is going to be a true arts and entertainment district. It's going to be a huge amenity for convention center goers.
Tell me more about this. What are you thinking?
Well, on day one, you know, our proposal will be building a 150-room Marriott Tribute Hotel that's attached to the convention center that'll have a restaurant in it. And then we control all the land across the street. There's further land to the west of there. We're looking at all kinds of other development, another hotel, different types of amenities. Like, you know, we could be putting, there's roughly like 16 acres of land that we can develop there. You know, the city wants to find a spot for an indoor water park. They want to find a location for a science museum, a performing arts center, all kinds of other entertainment amenities have room out there, and we're working on all those plans. It's kind of a phase two to this development.
Do you own the 16 acres?
We own portions of it, have some of it under contract or negotiation, and working to get all of that.
Okay, so you can figure out a way to get that done.
And if we don't get it, I'm sure some other developer will be buying stuff up and doing other projects out there, because it's going to be in a very attractive area.
Right. Look at what happened over by Kingpins and Barron's over there and Sweet Shots. Is all these little things have kind of sprung up around it. And so it certainly is worth considering that too. I got a text message here from a buddy of mine who is listening. Says, Steve, remember those that thought putting the mall way out in the middle of nowhere was a stupid idea? Well, this is not even anywhere near that. You're right. It's kind of on the edge of downtown. And I guess it would expand the infrastructure and could potentially, I'm not trying to make your argument for you, but the people who own property kind of between there and downtown for housing and apartments and whatever else, I would think they would be very excited about this.
Yeah, and I think when the city looks at that is, you know, convention center is an economic engine. It drives traffic. You know, that's new money coming into our economy from visitors. Mm. They pay sales tax. They buy gas. They shop at restaurants. That's new money for Fargo. That's a huge benefit to the city coffers. But then the other benefit is the economic development that happens around that. That is great property tax increases for the city, and city's looking to fix some budget problems right now. And a way to do that is to increase all of these revenue sources for what they have coming in. That's all truly pretty much only possible in our proposal.
Let me again play devil's advocate for a minute. Let's just say this happens. You guys get it. We build it. It's great. But what if those things don't spring up around there? And we finally, we've got this really great convention center next to a really great Brujala and a really great hotel, but nothing else kind of fills in there. Like, what are the chances that that could happen?
I would just look at our track record of what we do and what we're able to produce. We're committed to developing this, and our group would be the operators of the convention center. We're the owners and operators of the hotel. We have a vested interest in making sure that that area develops and keeps growing. And like I said, Brujala is already one of the major attractions. We already have the people and the traffic coming there. The development will follow.
Okay, so let's talk about the financial piece to this. The worry that I have, if I'm honest, is people that study these things say they almost hardly ever break even on the building piece of it and then operating going forward. How do we know that at the Brujala site, the taxpayers of Fargo are not going to have to start writing subsidy checks to keep this thing going?
Right. We approach the project with the same concerns. You know, I'm a townie. I want to see Fargo be successful. And I've said from the beginning that I want Fargo to get a convention center more than I want to get the convention center. So we looked at all of those concerns and built that into our proposal to protect the city and ultimately the taxpayers from never carrying the bag on this. So in our proposal, we've built a financing structure and a fund so that all of the private development that we do backstops and shores up the convention center, produces that reserve fund so that never goes back to the city general fund. And then ultimately, we're committing to guaranteeing that as the developers, we'll cover any losses on the building so that that never again goes back to the taxpayers of Fargo. There will be no risk to the city coffers.
Okay, so this is an important point. So you're guaranteeing that at least on the build phase, that whatever, if the money that comes in from the hospitality tax doesn't quite cover it, you're going to write the check to finish the project as you diagrammed it out and gave it to the city.
Yep, and then also throughout the operations, that if there's a loss on the convention center, which you know we're going to work our hardest to make sure that doesn't happen, and we're pretty confident we can do that. But ultimately, if there is a loss, that would never come back to the city and have to go, the general fund would never have to cough up the money for that. We've set up kind of a financing structure out there through a community investment fund that all of the property tax that we pay goes into that. And ultimately, if that's not even enough, we as developers would continue to write that check for the operating loss on the convention center.
Okay, talk to me. Let me just see here. I've only got about 30 seconds before break. Can you hang on for a little
bit
longer? Okay. When we come back, I want to have you talk to me like I'm 10 years old on this community investment fund or whatever, because it sounds too good to be true, but I'm not doubting your integrity on this either. I just want to have you help explain that to us, because that's the thing that so many people are really nervous about, is that these things always sound great, and then in the end, it's a bill of goods. And I want to have you help us understand that a little bit better. So we're going to do that. When we come back, Mark Bjornstad, co-founder and president of Bruhalla, in studio here with us. We'll continue that conversation. If you have a question for Mark, we can sneak that in too. 701-271-1100. Or text that same number. We'll be right back. Visiting with Mark Bjornstad, co-founder and president of Bruhalla, about their plan for convention center. Okay, so Mark, I've got like another 2 hours worth of questions here for you, but let's try to get to this. Explain it to me like I'm 10 years old with how you're not asking the city for the typical sort of TIF, Renaissance Zone, pilot, whatever, but there is something that you're trying to do here too. So explain it to those of us who don't spend a lot of time in this world.
Sure. So to be clear, we are not asking for any tax incentives for us as private developers. There is no money being given to us on any of the private development. In fact, what we're setting up is a kind of like a reverse TIF. So it's a benefit for the city. So all of our property tax that we pay, you know, that we'll be paying on day one, that goes into a fund for the city, and that gets to be used however the city wants. It gets to backstop the convention center, and it can be used to fund any of the future development around that
area. Okay, so that sounds like just your regular tax payment, though. How is this different?
So the city sets up a district and recaptures all of that in that area. And this is really common when, like in major metro areas, when they look at developing around a stadium and they look at doing that triple P, that public-private partnership.
Yeah.
It's a way for the city to receive that property tax and then continue to invest and ensure that there's no losses in that area, and it never comes back to the general fund. Because if the city was looking at developing this area, they would have to be, you know, looking at sidewalks or putting other bus stops or like a parking ramp, and they'd have to come up with the money for that and go into their general fund for it. This looks at us as private developers. We commit to a certain amount of development around there, and then they take our property taxes that we're paying, and they use that to fund everything that happens around there. And that's what covers the reserves on the building. That's what covers the losses. And in, you know, in the lifespan of that TIF, this could have well over $100 million in it. Mm. That's one of the big benefits that when we looked at other projects like this that have been done in town, like the Fargo Dome or the Civic Center, those buildings have lived out kind of their useful life. Now they need money to remodel, shore up that product and keep it in the new era, but they don't have any revenue for that.
Yeah.
This is how new developments are done like that, so that there is a long-standing funding source so that remodeling, expansion, parking ramps, anything that needs to happen in the future has money to do that, and it never comes back to the taxpayers asking for another sales tax or anything like that, which is what, you know, the Dome has done, or they've tried to do downtown to look at getting ways to shore up those buildings.
So in my simple mind here, I'm trying to understand how this is different than your normal taxes. So if Steve Hallstrom has a building or my property taxes for my house, I give that to the city. They can do kind of whatever. You're saying we're going to do that mostly, but the money that we're going to pay for our taxes actually will go back to the needs infrastructure-wise that we might have in our development. Is that right?
It's all – so the way that it works, it's owned by the city, that fund. It's directed by the city.
Yeah.
Private developers have no control over that, and it can only be used for the community benefit.
Okay.
It can't be used on any private development. It can't be a benefit to us as private developers. There's no kickbacks
okay.
on this program at all.
And by doing this, that sort of completes your kind of two-part double-barrel guarantees. You're guaranteeing that we'll not have a shortfall that the public has to pay for when we build this, and that there will not be, hey, we're in trouble here, this isn't making enough money, or we're not breaking even, so we got to have a quarter-cent sales tax thing. This is how you ensure that you have that second guarantee for operations.
Yep. And then finally, us as developers would be providing like a final backstop that said if there were any further losses or if the taxing revenue for the hotel fee doesn't come in, the private developers, us in this project, would cut that check to cover that before it would ever go back to the city.
I'm trying to find holes to poke in your plan here. I'm not finding any at this point.
Hey, I love you know, getting the critiques on this, and that's what we've spent 2 years working on this project because we love Fargo. We want this to be a great asset, and so we looked at all of those areas where Fargo would have risk, where this could hurt the taxpayers, took all of that risk out, and just tried to make sure that this was a plan that was a pure benefit for our economy and our community.
Yeah, and I don't even want to say I'm critiquing. I'm just asking the honest questions because, Mark, you're a property owner too. You know what taxes have done in this town.
Yep.
It's insane how much money they keep asking us for in downtown Fargo. And last time they came with a city budget was 11% increase over the year before. And people like me and you and everybody listening to this, no matter where you live, you're saying, I'm going broke on property taxes and I can't handle it anymore. And that's why we want to be excited about things happening in our community like this. But we're like, every time they tell me some wonderful story, and in the end, I got to pay for it because there was some little clause or little catch, and it sounds like there's not catches and clauses here, other than I guess you could say, well, if this tax money has to go toward the property, that's kind of, but honestly, that seems like about as good of an offer as you're going to get from anybody on these things.
Right, and I think the big benefit is that if the city's looking to increase revenue and not get that from property tax increases on homeowners in town, you need to get that from the other sources like sales tax and those things. And when the convention center is bringing in business, those are new visitors to our economy, paying that sales tax and filling the city coffers.
Do you have another 10, 15 minutes to hang out with me? I've got a bunch of text messages that have come in, and there's some good ones. And I just, because I'm so curious, I haven't given them any time. So if you could hang out for a few minutes, I'd love to
continue.
Okay, sounds good. Back with Mark with more on the Steve Halsham Show. Hour number two coming up after this. Hour number two of the Steve Halsham Show is brought to you in part by the good folks at PetroServe USA. And if you have not had lunch or if you don't have lunch plans yet, well, let me give you some suggestions, my friend, because over in Valley City today at the PetroServe store, they've got bacon cheeseburger hot dish. In Harwood, chicken pot pie, West Main Avenue, southern chicken bowl, or bacon. So bacon cheeseburger hot dish. I thought it was just bacon, but it's bacon cheeseburger hot. Boy, does that sound good. Yeah, you're not going to be hungry after you walk away from that plate of food. Beef stew today at 12th Avenue. 205 NP Avenue, the Swedish meatballs. They also have those Swedish meatballs over in Euland today. In Ada, General Tso's Chicken. 45th Street, they got the Taco Mac. Castleton Sloppy Joe's. You get a meatball sub today in Glendon. Chicken fettuccine in Wappanen. And at the Cheyenne store, beef stew. So basically all you need to know is this. When you drive by a gas station, you see a sign that says PetroServe USA, and you're hungry, just go in there because they're going to have something good for you. And the treats and the snacks, they got all the beverages there. So you can get a full meal, full stomach, and you're going to save money too. I mean, what's not to like about all that? PetroServe USA, helping America fuel better. I'm breaking all the rules with the show today because I'm having so much fun talking with Mark Bjornstedt today. We're getting all kinds of answers and clarity on this convention center project that they have, which was scored the number one option from the committee, and now the city commission is looking at that, and the downtown option is kind of the two finalists there. And Mark has basically told us about how they are guaranteeing that there will not be shortfalls with either the building of the building or operation, and this is as you know from listening to me, this is my biggest concern about this, because we can't handle another tax increase of any kind. I don't care if it's a hospitality, if it's a sales, if it's a property tax, whatever. We just don't need any more taxes. And Mark and his team have worked really hard to come up with a plan. We've talked a lot about that. Before I finish, though, I have a couple of questions, and then our audience has sent a ton of questions in here for you as well. So let me get mine out of the way, and then I'll get to Tex. Have you been able to project what you think utilization is going to look like if you guys get this thing built? Let's say you start breaking ground end of the summer, you're ready by spring of 28 or whatever. Like, what does that first year look like, and how many events you think you would have in there?
Yeah, so you know, years ago, the CVB and the city started working with some consultants to scope that. And they've been updating that as we've been getting closer to the convention center. And that's a really good look at the data of what types of events are looking for events in town. And there's a lot. Anecdotally, the CVB talks about every year about how many events they're turning away because there isn't a space in Fargo. And we're already getting calls about trying to book space in the convention center just from people hearing that it might be coming there. That we've got.
How many calls have you got?
We were just touring a group this week that they were booking some space in Brewhalla, and they said in 3 years we want to move this over to the convention center. We're ready to sign for that right now. And we thought, well, we got a couple more steps to get through.
We're a little early on that.
There is an incredible.
They're ready to sign right now.
There is an incredible amount of demand for a space like this in Fargo. I mean, Fargo's the metro hub for the whole region, and it's kind of a shame that we don't have this. And those are visitors and organizations that are trying to give Fargo money. We've been turning it away for decades.
Why do you think that the whole convention piece hasn't clicked here? I mean, the Fargo Dome has got room up there. They have dates on the calendar. You got the Civic downtown. You got Shields Arena over Urban Plains, whatever you want to call it. You got the stuff at NECU. Why do you think this convention center piece hasn't clicked here?
You know, I don't know the historical aspect of it, but I think why it's a great opportunity for Fargo now is that a lot of other communities in the region have built a convention center to try and create the traffic and the demand and bring it in there. Fargo's already organically built that. It's a growing community. It's a great business hub. There's tons of visitors that want to come here. This is the perfect time now to put a convention center in when the demand is already here. We're not doing this speculatively. This is a need. It's being asked for by the visitors, and it's the perfect time to be doing it.
Interesting. Why do these... my friend Tony Gehrig says these things never make money and they always lose. So not only do they not make money, they don't break even. If he's right, I've not done the study, but I'm assuming he's put in some research on this. When these projects fail and are money losers 5 years after they get built, everybody says all the right things, they get built and then they lose money and then the public's got to figure out what to do. Why do they fail when they do? What's the problem?
You know, always never statements are... always kind of tough
get
to
it.
Work with.
Get
I mean,
it. Yep.
You know, convention centers don't always fail. That's not true. But they often are at like a budget neutral, a small loss, a small gain. I mean, you look at the Fargo Dome, it's kind of, they lose a little bit, they make a little bit. One of the big reasons that happens a lot of times is one, third party managers that they're, you know, professional convention center operators. They have dozens of convention centers in their portfolio and they're booking for all of them. And they kind of make all of them compete. In our proposal, that would not be the case. It would be the Visit Fargo-Moorhead Convention Center Bureau would be operating the sales and marketing for it alongside us as the operators.
So you don't have to mess with any of that.
We don't have to pay an outside manager, and we don't have to worry about somebody competing against us. We are only focused on Fargo. And then when we're the operators and the private developer around there and we own the hotel, we have a vested interest in making sure that convention center is busy and booked and generating the economic impact for Fargo. And that's why we're willing to put, you know, our money on the line and say that we're guaranteeing this. And that's not guaranteeing that we just say it's going to work. We're guaranteeing it with covering that loss from the city.
Okay. So there are a couple of things that the structure here will allow you to run leaner and meaner than most.
Correct. So by partnering with the Convention and Visitors Bureau in town, the Visit Fargo-Moorhead, then they're handling the budget for the sales and marketing team.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge expense on a normal convention center. We won't have that here. That makes us lean. Mm-hmm. And then the other big expense is like the catering team and having to pay a catering team to always be there to work on that and handle that risk. we're working with an outside catering company. They'd be sheltering all of that risk and pay only a commission back to the convention center. So it's only a revenue source, not an expense source.
So you're not running a food business too then?
Nope.
Okay. All right, let's go rapid fire here. Your answers are great because you give us things in like 30 seconds. Give me your best 15, 20 seconds on the texts that have come in. And I'm not going to filter. I'm just going to go shotgun. We don't need a convention center. They just want one.
We need one. You know, and Fargo needs this revenue source. This is a great thing for the economy. This is outside money coming in, paying for the convention center and filling the city coffers.
There are no streets over there. Traffic will be a nightmare.
Brawlhalla already sees 550,000 guests a year. That's an incredible traffic load. Convention centers are not like stadiums. We're not seeing 15, 20,000 people coming at one time and leaving one time. It's that trickling in frequent days of the year. It's already been studied by the city engineers. First Avenue can handle all of the traffic that would happen.
Will there be a parking ramp?
There'll be ample street parking, you know, on-grade parking for day one. And then with that community investment fund that we set up, if that becomes a need down the future, that will be an opportunity that would never go back to the city to ask to pay for a parking ramp. It's all available in that fund so the city can do that if they want to. There'll be money for that.
What happens if this turns into another Epic Company's situations? What happens if this development group folds and now we have this big empty building sitting there?
Yeah, well, I think the important thing is that we're not asking for tax incentives. We're not needing any of that in our business. We've got groups like Cityscapes Development and MBA Development. Those are proven and successful developers in town with the ability to guarantee this. This is not an Epic situation.
So this convention center paid for by my tax money will make the owners of Brawlhalla very rich. That's just a statement. It's not a question, but how would you respond?
It's not paid for by taxpayers of Fargo. That's one of the great things. This is not paid by property taxes. It's not paid by sales tax. This is paid by a fee on hotels from visitors. So As a resident of Fargo, you get all of the benefit of the convention center visitors. They come, they pay the sales tax, they fill the city coffers and make it so that we don't have to go back to the taxpayers and ask for property tax increases.
Rural North Dakotan here. What is all this brouhaha? What is Brawlhalla?
Yeah, you got to come and visit it.
It's seriously
a food and entertainment.
That's
wonderland.
My fault. I should have talked a little bit more about that. I thought I did, but yeah, it's like a big food hall, entertainment venue, and really good hamburgers and pizza. By the way, the best beer in town is Drecker Ectogasm.
Thank you. That is my favorite.
No, it's not. Really?
Ectogasm is an amazing beer. It's an anomaly on the recipe, and we spent a lot of time doing it, and it's one of our favorite beers to brew.
It is so darn good. Okay. Let's see. Here's a picture of a heifer that just gave birth to a calf. Thank you for sending that in, but that's not for Mark. Mark, thanks for doing this. And as the process goes on, I'm sure we'll visit again. But thanks for giving us some extended time today. It's been great.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. It's been awesome.
Thanks for doing it. Mark Bjornstad, co-founder and president of Brawlhalla. Okay, I'm going to try to catch up best I can. I'm not sure how we're going to do this, but it was just such a good conversation. I thought really helpful for us to really get under the hood today with Mark. Be back with more after this. Markets have fallen a little bit here in the first hour and 20 minutes of the show. The Dow, which was up about 300 points, is down to a gain. Still, it's a gain, but only about 70. S&P 500 is up, though, by about 50 points. The NASDAQ is about where it was when we started the show. Up about 275 on the program here today. All right, I want to try to catch up on a few things. We went long with Mark, but I think this is really important because I do think if this can be done in a way that is not another bill for you and me in some way or another, or if the bill can be very small, like, how's that for taking a firm stand, right? But if the bill can be fairly small, these are good things for our community. It brings other businesses here. People want to move here. It's true. Sometimes we get crabby about that. I don't care, business. Well, it's good to have a bigger economic base. It's good to have people that want to be part of our community. More options, more quality of life things. These are all good, but we have spent so much money on things that we don't need in this city that don't really help us at all. They're just extra expenses. So if this can be done in a responsible way where it is something that pays for it, like the Fargo Dome is a good example. But on the good years, they build a little slush fund, and then they are able to handle their losses so that they've never had to come back to us and say, hey, you know, we need another tax for the Fargo Dome. So this is all good. And I believe that since we also have another finalist with Kilbourne Group, I will call Mike Allmendinger, get him on too, and ask him the same questions, give him the same opportunity, since that is the other option that is on the table there. Okay, let's try to do a couple things that we have got on the schedule for today here. Story of the day is worth getting into here on this one here. And so I had a chance, and Addison, if you give me host PC, I'm going to play this right from my computer here, because I did not give this to you ahead of time to prepare for the show. This is a an interview that was done. It's about 4 minutes long with Karl Rove, and he's explaining why the Supreme Court just blew up all of this gerrymandering and recreating the legislative districts here. And there's a couple of big topics that are here. This is a really good 4 minutes. And if you're like me and you've heard something about this, but you haven't really dived into it too much, I think this is really good. Even if you've heard something about it, a really good overall conversation. Here's how this happened with Karl Rove and then Bill Hemmer and Dana Perino on Fox News Channel.
2026, but a substantial impact on 2028. Specifically, in 2026, there are seven states in the Southeast who could make some changes. But you've got a board to introduce Louisiana, what it means, and also Alabama. Go ahead and explain your rationale now, Carl.
Well, first of all, in Louisiana, there are two black majority districts. One of them is from New Orleans to Baton Rouge, straight up the Mississippi River. And that's historically been a black district. They created, because of the Voting Rights Act, they felt that they had to create a second one, the 6th District. It runs from Shreveport in the northwest corner of the state and runs in a narrow sort of ribbon all the way across the state to New Orleans, to close to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And it you look at it and you say, this is odd, and it is drawn for one reason and one reason only, that is to create a majority black district. So, you know, they literally at one point are like almost down to the size of a road connecting parts of this district. Mm-hmm. Alabama has historically had Alabama 6, which has been dominated by Montgomery. But in order to create a black majority district, this district runs from nearly the western border of Alabama to the eastern border of Alabama, making its way across the state in order to grab black precincts and black counties. They created a new district to meet the voting rights requirement. And again, it runs from the eastern part of the western part of the state up from Tuscaloosa and the so-called Black Belt to Birmingham. And if you look at it, it's like a giant finger poking north in order to grab enough black voters in Birmingham to create a majority district. So these are drawn for one purpose and one purpose only, which is let's create a district with a majority of black voters in it. And we can't, under the Voting Rights Act, then have what's called retrogression. We can't reduce the number of black voters. So each census, we're required to do even more extraordinary things in order to keep the number of black voters in the majority. Think what we would be saying if we said, all right, you have to draw white majority districts or Latino majority districts or Asian American majority districts and engaged in that kind of, you know, sort of, you know, race groupings in order to create districts dominated by one race or ethnic
background.
That
logic would be unacceptable to the
system. Yes, 100% it would be.
Carl, so for people that are heading into cocktail hour tonight and through the weekend, if they hear someone say, this is a disaster, this means that blacks are completely now unrepresented, the ones that have gone completely to the sky is falling because of this ruling, what would you say are their best arguments against the sky is not falling?
Well, first of all, most states have already set the elections. They've had their primaries. They've set the filing deadlines. Alabama has already said, look, we recognize that we've got to redo this, but we cannot do it this year. We're going to do it in the future. We're going to do it before the next election. Louisiana's thinking about trying to do this. We'll see if they're able to pull it off. The second thing I'd say is that it increases the influence of black voters, because no longer are they grouped together under the notion of the only way that you can elect somebody who can represent blacks is to have a majority of black blacks in that district. Now you're going to have blacks that are in a, you know, in a district that has a community of interest and is more compact, and in which the both parties are going to say, we need to get inroads in that community or dominate that community in order to elect one of our own to the U.S. Congress. So
right.
I see it just the opposite. Black voters are no longer being sort of segregated and put into a black district. They're now going to be part of a larger community of interest. This is, you know, southwestern Alabama. This is northwestern Louisiana. And as a result, the smart political candidates and the smart political parties are going to be going after their votes.
Carl, great to have you on. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
so
analysis.
Good stuff there. We'll talk about it from Rove, and really good questions from Dana Perino and Bill Hemmer on that as well. It's just to me, who I'm not a political person. Like, I am not, you know, Republicans must win everything, Democrats must lose everything, or vice versa. I'm a guy that says, just make it make sense to me. Just give me some common sense here. Can we have an impartial group of people look at this and say, here's how these districts should be drawn up, rather than making this a big, you know, a territorial war? Because it seems to me that both parties really do, if we're honest about it, treat the redistricting conversation as more of a weapon than a democratic process. Like, I don't think anybody's trying to just say, let's just make this work. Now, I get it if you look at the other side and you say, these people are insane and we've got to try to have some order here somehow. We've got to do it this way. But for the people in the middle who decide the elections, like, if you could be the party that communicates, we just want something fair and objective, you'd have a chance to win just about every election, because you're not being a political animal. You're just doing what's right here. And I don't know if we can ever find independent commissions. I don't know if there are really independents about that. But what the country really needs is somebody to come and look at this objectively and say, here's what should happen if we're honest about it. More on the show next. Vision Ford Lincoln just thinks a little differently than most auto dealerships do. They sit back in their chair once in a while, they look up at the ceiling and go, how can we make it easier for a guy or a gal in Fargo or Jamestown or Detroit Lakes or Alexandria, wherever, how can we make it easier for them to own one of our vehicles? And then somebody comes up with the idea to do a mobile oil change unit. And then sooner or later, they end up at Steve Hallstrom's office doing the oil change on a Lincoln Navigator in the parking lot in the middle of January, so Steve doesn't have to drive his car down to Wappanin or even across the street or anywhere to get the oil changed. They have just worked harder than most everybody else at trying to find ways to make the user experience friendly, easy, and enjoyable. And when's the last time you could say that about your car, truck, SUV ownership experience? DriveWithVision.com. They've got 18 service drivers. If you got to get the car down to the shop, they'll send someone up and get it and bring it back to you. It's amazing what they are doing down there. DriveWithVision.com. You can check out all the cars on their website as well. They've got job opportunities right now in sales and in service. Check it all out at DriveWithVision.com. DriveWithVision.com. 33 past the hour, and it's time to check in with our friend Bridget Riedel, Ag Director here at Fieldstone Group. She joins us each Friday at this time to talk about farm issues. Bridget, you would be proud of the Steve Hallstrom Show audience here this morning. I have in our text line a photo of a new mama heifer who just gave birth to a little calf down in Bertha today.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is it a little black Angus with a white face?
I don't know if it's a purebred black Angus. It's looks like all black. Looks like the calf has got a little white on its hooves. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's purebred or not, but mama sure looks a dark shade. So maybe so.
She's happy. Calf is out and doing standing up and moving around.
Yeah, can you imagine? Like, you know, if you're a human and have a baby, like, there's books you can read and stuff, and people tell you what to expect when you're expecting. If you're a cow, you're just, like, figuring it out as you go along. Yeah. Like, hey, what happened to me?
Whoa.
I just had a little fun with that bull a couple of months ago, and here we are. What's the gestation period for a calf?
Similar to what you look like for humans, but okay. Think about birth weight. You know, you can easily have an 80-pound calf. So we're going to have to translate that. I'm sure there's some way I can do a ratio of what size baby that would be in humans, although there's probably a lot of new mothers out there who are like, do not compare me to a cow. Yeah. I believe those words were spoken by my sister-in-law to my brother in the delivery room. So, yes.
Well, the miracle of birth, right? It's just it's so amazing to me. Humans, animals, whatever, just this whole thing, just the way God puts it together, it's just insane. And now my friends in Bertha who send us some pics by text every once in a while of their cow-calf operation, now they've got a walking, talking $1,000 bill on their hands. So this is a good thing in a number of different different reasons. So
yeah, death loss this year was a little bit rough, considering that you're thinking to yourself,
ooh,
this is a lot more value than it was just a couple years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we begin our chat with that little nugget there as we get going here.
Yeah.
A lot of things going on in the news today, but none more so than the Farm Bill getting passed. And these things, I could spend the next 20 minutes talking about the different pieces. What's the big takeaway for farmers and ranchers, do you think, here?
So this was, it's not fully approved, first of all. The House passed this.
It's
H.R. 7567. It's a bipartisan Farm, Food, and National Security Act for 2026 is what they're calling it. So there were extensive updates to food and ag programs in a very budget-neutral package. Then when you think about some of the highlights for us in ag, year-round E15 sales, so ethanol sales for all states, was removed from the bill and will be voted on separately in 2 weeks. Is that a win or a loss for corn production? Would have been great to get it done instead of waiting another 2 weeks, because right now E85 can be sold in only, I believe it's 8 states year round. The rest of the country, it's just for specific summer months. Mm-hmm. So if we could change that, particularly where we're sitting with gasoline prices right now, that would be a benefit to many. Then there was a late amendment language that would strengthen the domestic supply of fertilizer. In the news break, we heard discussion that Julie Fedorchuk was behind sponsoring a bill that talks about extending the assistance the loan assistance to help farmers be able to transfer more on-farm fertilizer storage. So when you're buying, it's kind of like a stock-up sale, right? You saw a good price, so you bought a bunch and took it home, put it in the pantry. Same thing that you're wanting to do on the farm is being able to supply or create a way to have a cheaper supply for yourself by having more storage for whether it's dry or liquid fertilizer on farm. And then there's also lots of new ideas about how we can do our own domestic production. And then lastly, the pesticide liability protections.
Yes, I want to ask you about this. Yes.
Yes. Yep. So what would you like to ask before I
Well, where do you come down on this? I understand both sides here. As just a human being who walks around and tries to think through the issues of the day, mm-hmm. I get very nervous about us saying we're going to give carte blanche protection to industries, whatever. I don't like it with vaccines. I don't like it with pesticides. I don't like it with glyphosate. It just feels to me like we are giving people some immunity when we might find out later that there was something sinister going on. So I don't like that at its essence, but I also understand that in Kelly Armstrong has said it on this program. He said, there are so many frivolous lawsuits on all this stuff that if we allowed people to sue Bayer for all of this stuff going on with Roundup as often as they wanted to, they would be broke as a company. They wouldn't be able to make the stuff that we need. So I get all of that. Where do you come down on this one? Are we doing the right thing here by, in this case now, we're still keeping some of that liability potential intact?
I think I'm with you. First of all, I feel like it's a little bit too soon to tell if we're making the right decision yet. First things first, our lives are so much more transparent and we have so much more science and understanding than we did 50 years ago when we were worrying about DDT and other pesticides like that. Things have gotten so much more safe than what we've had before. We now understand what it means when we talk about LD50s and how long things can stay in the environment or dissipate. So I feel like the products that we're working with these days are much more fair in nature and in the environment. By making these precedents, you're right. If we protect all of these people in a way, we have to, because if not, we're going to sue the crap out of each other,
right?
Whether it's with pesticides or with drug companies, it doesn't matter what it is. And there's got to be a balance in here somewhere, right? We always talk about finding that balance. What's going to happen, though, is if we continue to do this, whether it's with glyphosate, with paraquat, with all sorts of other pesticides, and say, well, you can sue anybody you want over that, there was still a decision made by an individual to use it, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Two, did they follow the label? Because the label is the law. Those are the directions. What kind of upsetting precedent are we going to have? How many of these pesticides will we lose worldwide that then impacts our food production? Nobody is currently happy with inflation on food. By taking away more of our opportunities to grow food at the level that we need to supply the globe, suddenly we're out of the game. It's going to be more expensive. We're going to have greater weed problems. When we use pesticides today, we get to harvest 95% of our crop. Without using weed control, disease and bug control, that's going to go to 60.
Mm.
So who gets that product? And how much more expensive is it going to be for farmers to have to rely on hand labor in the fields, which I don't know about you, but I'm not really excited about going out to hand weed fields. How is it going to change?
I've been there, done that, by the way.
Yeah, you
heard of bee bar. Nobody's idea of a good time.
No. So I feel like I'm probably talking out of both sides of my mouth because I see
know.
Two
same
different
here.
Things.
Same here. I feel the same way.
I see two different things here, but I'm not sure we're making any of the right decisions. I think stripping this away leaves us at a problem situation at the farm gate. Mm. I feel empathy for those folks who still want to be able to have those protections so they can sue, but I'm kind of tired of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get you.
I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you didn't, but that's okay, because I don't know that there is an answer. I think there's just opinions and people's experience. Okay, by the way, I've got an update to Angus calf gate here. It is a registered black Angus calf. Got a follow-up text from the owner, so congrats. So anyway, important detail just into the newsroom. Let's go to the phone lines right now. The Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Grant wants to talk about soil health with Bridget. Hey Grant, what's going on?
Hey, talking about your chemicals, and we do a lot of no-till, you know, out in western North Dakota.
Yes.
The one good thing you need to explain, and it gets missed all the time, is when we do these no-tills, we are applying chemicals, right, to maintain the weeds. Well, mm-hmm. if you just start hammering down everything with heavy tillage, I mean, we lose soil so quick out here, where out east it's a different farming practice where you kind of have to sow more to get it drier when you just have a lot more topsoil. So when it comes down to soil health, you're going over less acres with tillage, you're burning up less diesel, you're making the soil stay there. That is the case for all these chemicals. And glyphosate is only a half-life of 8 hours.
Yep.
So there's a lot of things that is never spoken about. And, you know, it's the same thing. It's like plugging your nose and, okay, we'll defend Bayer and Monsanto and whoever, Corteva, for now. But, yeah, it'd be forever suing everybody if this case continues to linger.
I really want to go back to what Grant said about soil health, because that's huge. When you are farming in a no-till situation, you are trying to have minimal soil disturbance in order to maintain as much moisture as you can and still be able to raise a great crop out there. And highly erodible soils need that cover, whether it's with the stubble, with the cover crop. He's right. If we lose glyphosate, paraquat, and some of those things that help us fight kochia, and now we have to turn to tillage, mm-hmm. you guys get worried when we see dust storms in the spring? It ain't going to get any better.
They're not going to get any better. Yeah.
Grant's got a great point.
Yeah, the half-life thing is important, too. And that's something that doesn't get it's not in the first paragraph of the news story hardly ever. So that's a good point. Grant, thanks. We had to let you go just out of the interest of time. Bridget, I got about 20 seconds left. Any other quick notes and nuggets you want to leave with us?
May 1st, it is Beef Month. Get out there and enjoy that. Have a great amount of protein. It is also Mental Health Awareness Month. Keep an eye on your friends, neighbors, and farmers, as well as your equipment salesmen and bankers. We're all in this together.
So
I hate
true.
That term, but
yeah.
it's true.
No, it takes a village. Yeah, yep. No doubt about it. It takes a farm community. Bridget, thanks for the time, my friend. Appreciate it as well. You have a great rest of the day, great weekend, and thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
The one and only Bridget Riedel, Flag Family Fieldstone Group Ag Director, joining us here on the Steve Holcim Show. All right, I got a bunch of texts I want to get to, a couple emails as well, and a couple of items to close out the show here today when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Hey, if you're looking for something to do after work on Monday and you've been hearing us talking with the good folks at Heritage Homes about the ranch at Sunset Valley in Horace, they've got an open house going on between 4 and 7 on Monday. And no cost, no obligation. They're not going to hound you or tackle you from behind and start trying to grab your wallet on site. None of that will happen, but it will be a chance for you to see the new clubhouse and model home. Take a look at the living plans that they have there. HeritageFargo.com will have more details on this, but our own Bonnie Amistadi from the newsroom is going to be out there doing some reports on Monday between 4 and 7. I'm really intrigued by this because I love the easy living that you get with kind of single family or single level living, plus the connection that you get in a kind of organized, planned community of people 50 and better. So this can be some good stuff there. So if you've been thinking about it after hearing the folks from Heritage Homes on our program, Troy Mattern and the gang there, maybe worth checking that out. Okay, I've got a whole bunch of stuff I want to get to, but some breaking news in here. Just a minute ago, Kristen Robbins has suspended her campaign for Minnesota governor. She is the Maple Grove state representative, one of the first people to announce that she was running for governor. She's decided to get out. Her statement just says, basically, I've just decided the best way for me to fight is from the outside on this thing, is going to serve until the end of her term. And so it looks like she's getting out of politics altogether here on this deal. And I continue to hear from people that are fairly connected within the Minnesota political world that Amy Klobuchar, in polling that's been done, has a big lead. And it seems as though most people believe that it's just a matter of time that Klobuchar cannot be beaten by any of the Republicans, including Lisa Damuth. Kristen Robbins was in there. Peggy Bennett, who we had on the show a couple of days ago. A couple of people like Chris Maddow has gotten out. So it feels like it's Damuth against Klobuchar. And I hear people who don't seem to have a dog in the fight saying, look, there's just no way that Klobuchar is going to lose. She can say that she wasn't running Minnesota when Minnesota was run badly. And there are some good ads out by some conservative groups in Minnesota. I heard one yesterday when I was over in Grand Rapids talking about Amy Klobuchar, you want another Democrat to run Minnesota? Are you kidding me? These people have shown us what they can do. And it's a really good ad. But I just don't know that enough people will look at it that way. I wish I knew, and I honestly haven't seen much in the way of polling in that. And certainly they're still in primary mode and will be until August. But Robbins is out, and so we'll see what happens. And my guess is pretty soon, I think Scott Jensen is out too. They seem to all kind of just be one by one. Lisa Damuth is still being pretty bold in her rhetoric and her fight level. So I hope so. It seems like she's the best chance. She can raise the money and all that good stuff. So that's some breaking news here for us today. Other sort of breaking news, the Florida map has passed in the state Senate and now heads to Ron DeSantis' desk to be signed into law. This is the redistricting map in Florida. And I'm reading some online commentary about this. And you guys know that I'm a big Ron DeSantis fan. I can't explain to you why he can't seem to catch mojo in the Trump era. But it's been hard for him. I don't think that he is probably the favorite going into 2028 among the Republicans. But in a different time, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago, or maybe 10 years from now, things might change. But Florida is the freest state in the country, and it's because of Ron DeSantis. He got this done in 2 days, is with the commentary that I'm seeing. 2 days to get this done. The dude is simply a legend, one commentator said about this. So Florida got its map done, and there's a lot of red there. I've kind of given up saying if I think this is good or not. It just seems like everybody is pulling every string possible, and it's a partisan war. And if you can change things up in your state to make it for your benefit, you're doing it. That's how it feels to me. I'd like to think that it's more constructive or more anti-bias than that, but it just seems like everybody's doing it. And I don't know. I guess if it works out for us, it works out for us. But the whole thing seems a little greasy to me. So we have that. I will. I've been waiting for an opportunity to play for you the comments from the new Maha officer at Steak and Shake. His name is Michael Bowes. And this is really a fun little commentary. It's only about a minute long, but not able to sneak that in today. We'll do that. I can't say tomorrow because Addison's like, I ain't coming in to work tomorrow. So you
that's extra.
You want to do a show, you can have at it, but it's not going to be me. And it won't be me either. So we'll do that on Monday. I promise we'll get that in. Hey, thanks for all the texts that have come in today about Fargo Convention Center, about glyphosate, things that just not able to get to today. So appreciate all of you for all of that. What a week it's been. And thanks to those of you who will send a text or an email saying, hey, Steve, I'm not one to call, jump on the show. I'm not a look at me kind of guy or gal, but I just want you to know I love the show. Love the way you talk about things and try to sort it through because I'm doing it myself. I get a couple of those every day. Thank you for that. Have a great weekend, my friend. Scotty's next. Keep on flying that flag.